Life is a gift for which we are all grateful. We gather in community to celebrate the glories and the mysteries of this great gift.
Good morning. The opening words are by David C. Pohl. He was instrumental in combining the Unitarian and Universalist in the 1950s, and he is a minister emeritus at the First Unitarian Church of Ottawa. We come to this time and this place to discover the wondrous gifts of free religious community, to renew our faith in the holiness, goodness, and beauty of life, to reaffirm the way of the open mind and the full heart, to rekindle the flame of memory and hope, and to reclaim the vision of an earth made fair with all her people one. Today's meditation was written by Nancy Wood. She is a writer and poetess from the southwestern part of the U.S. in the Pueblo, Taos, New Mexico area. Akiva traditionally was a underground stone building built for meetings and worshiping. It appears to now have evolved into possibly a round form with an opening at the top of it to let the light sunlight in. If you're ever in Red Deer, Alberta, Douglas Cardinal, a First Nation architect, has built a Roman Catholic church that I believe approximates or is meant to be a kiva on the flat plains. It is our quiet time. We do not speak because voices are within us. It is our quiet time. We do not walk because the earth is within us. It is our quiet time. We do not dance because music has lifted us to a place where the spirit is. It is our quiet time. We rest with all of nature. We wake when the seven sisters wake. We greet them in the sky over the opening of the kiva.
Stone Island, as many of you know, is, to me at least, one of the most inquisitive people in our congregation. One of many words that one could use, I suppose. And many months ago, when Christine Johnston and a number of us made our presentation of Jesus the Man, based on Dr. Barbara Thiering's book, Ido spoke to me after about this person called the Christ, K-R-I-S-T, who was big in the time of the goddess. Well, that was a super hook for me because I'd never heard of this guy. And I asked him to prepare something for a future service. And that preparation has resulted in today's presentation, What Happened to the Great Goddess of Our Ancestors. I'm thanking John Vostansky, who's going to share the presentation with me. And Ido is going to be involved in a discussion after at 12 o'clock. We'll meet back here in the sanctuary. So those of you who like to take notes, get out your pens and paper because this is going to be one of those times. Today, the most prominent religions direct worship to a god in male-dominated churches, which too often fail to recognize the role of women in society. But it wasn't always so. Thousands of small figurines, some of which you saw illustrated in the book that Isabel showed the children, these small, well-endowed females have been found in many places from Japan to India, from North Africa to Arctic Europe, and through much of Asia. Some could be dated to around 34,000 years ago. It has been suggested that these sculptures were handheld by women giving birth and may have represented a supreme presence, such as a goddess. Life was difficult and depended upon sharing, caring, and respect. Eventually, the need arose for a holy place where the people could gather and express their thanks for the wonderful gifts of their goddess. The first section, the first holy land, is called the Cathedral Caves, and it existed from about 30,000 years ago until around 18,000 years ago. The oldest holy land of the goddess, we know, was in the region of the foothills of the Pyrenees, where many of the 250 large and small caves were decorated with art of wildlife by worshippers. The volume, quality, and variety of their exquisite art after all these millennia is still so impressive that it must have drawn the best artists from a huge area over a very long time. Likely, the ancient tradition of long pilgrimages to holy sites started here. And many of you have taken pilgrimages in that area. The pilgrims painted their art to thank the great goddess for her many beautiful gifts of this loving, sheltering, and nurturing earth. The first chief priestess could well have been installed in one of these caves as personification of a non-human spirit, known to the people in many manifestations. That is what the paintings and the sculptures seem to depict. All the wild animals depicted were thought to have been created and reincarnated by the great goddess, deep in the most sacred part of her holy uterus. The cave layout probably represented the female reproductive tract and honored the Almighty as a woman. Because of their principal role in reproduction, women were highly respected. Indeed, many anthropologists have concluded that very early on, these people had already developed the concept of a goddess. In the most favorable and holy places, new art was painted over older art. The walls and ceilings of the caves were totally covered. The area of the Pyrenees must have been abandoned when glaciation overwhelmed it around 18,000 years ago, and the people moved south and to the coast. The holy caves slumbered safely until rediscovery in 1859. The next holy land is in Ahaggar Massif, which existed between 18,000 years ago and 8,500 years ago. And it was developed in South Algeria in the mountain range called Ahaggar. Close to the center of the Sahara, where a beautiful cave was available for the chief priestess, who by this time, according to the anthropologists, was definitely the earthly manifestation of the great goddess. The Sahara at that time was a good place to live, and migrants came to settle there. Again, they paid their respect to the goddess and created tens of thousands of artworks in places often carefully hidden to be visible only to the deity. It was obvious that they did not create their art for people to see. Comparing the art of these two holy lands, there is little doubt that the activities in the Ahaggar are a continuation and evolution of the religion expressed in the cathedral caves in the Pyrenees. Caves were considered the uterus of the great goddess, and only the most sacred activities, such as reincarnation and creation, took place there. The art shown in the Ahaggar was not only of wild animals, but also illustrated many people and domesticated animals. They had a holistic view of life, and the earth was regarded as the deity, Mother Nature. The nurturing, sheltering, and loving deity was regarded as female and revered as wise, valiant, powerful, and just. It provided very different images of womanhood from those we are offered by the male-oriented religions of today. About 12,000 years ago, this simple religion fostered a true civilization which laid the foundations for a large number of sciences such as ocean navigation, astronomy, architecture, medicine, metallurgy, ceramics, wheeled vehicles, and also a highly developed language called Euskera, which everyone spoke. And Ito has a dictionary of it here with him today, among the four books that he brought for reference in our discussion later. The chief priestess married a special young man in the joyous sacred marriage ceremony, after which he became the Tammuz or Christ, meaning he speaks for the deity. He now was no longer human, but a holy spirit who could feel no pain. His job lasted about 8 years, after which he was expected to commit suicide, which was also done by many pharaohs in the first cataract of the Nile, in the whirlpool of Corryvreckan in Scotland, near Glasgow, or being nailed to the cross in Jerusalem. Common stuff. The holy land of the Ahaggar had to be abandoned about 8,500 years ago when rapid climate change caused the Sahara to become a bone-dry, burning, and dusty desert. The people fled north to the shores of the Mediterranean to be ferried to Europe, which had recently been deglaciated and they went as well to the Near East. The change of the formerly highly productive pastoral Sahara land into a huge desert created the need for a new holy land, and the islands of Malta were chosen. Stone workers and artisans of the great goddess from all over North Africa and Europe came to Malta to build the many amazing stone temples and altars which still stand there intact today. At this time, a patriarchal religion developed in the Near East which had a god. No love or caring anymore. By now, both religions were having internal troubles. The compulsory suicide of the Christ was resented by the people, not least of whom was the Christ, while the brutality, the greed, and the killing practiced by patriarchy was feared. Then, one terrible day, the holy land of Malta was completely depopulated, which happened around 1190 of the before the current era. A shudder of horror went through all the clans of the goddess. The people knew the massacre had been done by the people of the new god cult of the East. And this was admitted by the Egyptians and is apparently written out in one of the tombs. The people's most holy place had been dreadfully violated. The goddess and the associated clergy had all been murdered. Hatred against the Eastern people who had accepted the cult of the new male deity boiled over. The cry, "Revenge!" soon echoed through Western Europe, and all started to prepare for war. And as all hell broke loose, I'll ask John Bostanski to continue.
To paraphrase or to continue, all hell broke loose, according to Edo's words. In the time that Malta functioned as the Holy Land, patriarchal forces had sailed west. They first established footholds in Greece, then Italy, then Iberia, where they built monasteries, taught new patriarchal religions, and invented new languages to replace the ancient language of the goddess. It may have been the priestess Kirk of Northwest Europe, located on the Isle of Barra in the Hebrides, who took the initiative for Ireland and Scotland and organized a mighty fleet of hundreds of ships crammed with thousands of men, that's interesting, to do battle in the Mediterranean. The warriors came from everywhere in the West, from Scandinavia, the Baltic, the British Isles, France, Spain, Basque Country, and Morocco. A greater fighting force had never been seen in the world. Oh, I lost my place. Oh, there we are. The history of this war, which was fought in 1886 before Common Era, is carved and documented in great detail on the temple walls of Ramses III of Medinet Habu, located in the Nile Delta. Corroborating information came from Homer's Odyssey and many clay tablets found by the archaeologists. The patriarchal outposts in Spain, Italy, and Greece were first eliminated, and then all the priests were killed. After devastating all harbor cities in the eastern seaboard and destroying the Hittite Empire, the fleet advanced to Egypt to sail up the Nile with a very large force. But the Nile in the delta was shallow, and the large ocean-going ships were stranded. Ramses III's light oar-driven boats manned with longbow soldiers caused a massacre, undoubtedly. Many of the big ships were turned over and set on fire. The forces of the new male deity had won the battle decisively in the Mediterranean. But the goddess was not defeated elsewhere. A new holy land was needed for the people of the great goddess, which had to be out of reach of the patriarchy. The Hebrides. After the enormous defeat on the Nile, the goddess religion was now in full retreat, and the search was on to find a new holy land that was safe from the Mediterranean brutality. The goddess people still reigned supreme on the oceans, and the patriarchal forces never challenged them there. About 3,000 before present, a new holy land was chosen in the volcanic region of Northern Ireland and the Hebrides. In this area of beautiful caves, many very large religious monuments with artificial caves representing the birth canals and uterus of the goddess were constructed in Ireland to serve the needs of the goddess religion. The natural caves were chosen were in basaltic rock formations identical to the rocks in Ahaggar in Central Africa. There was no hint of a male god in this holy land of the Hebrides, but patriarchy was now free to create its own holy land in the east, and did this in the most ruthless and brutal ways, as is described in the gory details in the book of Joshua, the Bible. The rise of the patriarchy. After 30,000 years of religious activity based on the great goddess, in Jerusalem appeared a group of men who made not only the goddess subservient to the male deity, but put her up with the god in the sky, called her a sky goddess. They were inverted in all aspects of the goddess civilization. Their war cry was, "Knock the women off their pedestal." I'm in trouble with my wife. Women were forced to become servants of the men and were forbidden to take positions of leadership or teaching. They were placed in subordinate positions in the home. Infidelity was punished by stoning to death. They were ordered to cover their bodies completely and never to talk with strangers. It's a good idea. Certainly no woman would ever become a priest again. With the help of early Greek and Roman writers, the religious leaders from the Jerusalem had succeeded in obliterating almost all of the references to a holy land in the Western Isles. Old books were censored and rewritten or banned. Not only that, but many scientific achievements of the goddess people were assigned to Greek scholars who may have existed in name only on the pages of Homer. Hesiod, Solon, Plato, etc. To top off the deceit, all ancient libraries were burned, such as those in Ephesus. Okay, we'll take a vote here. Ephesus. And Alexandria. Old myths were altered, and the legendary women were portrayed as witches or sorcerers. The future. Before our ancestors had a goddess, nature was the nurturing spirit. The goddess followed and may have been respected for many millennia, but she was eliminated. The patriarch god took over, and judging by the many abandoned churches, it is now also on the way out. That leaves nature to be revered, respected, and cared for by the human race. Then we will have arrived when our early ancestors... There we will have arrived where our early ancestors started so long ago. First, our society was woman-guided society. Then it became male-dominated. It is now time for both male and female to take charge of the world without greed and brutality. It is time we get back to the way of Asherah, the loving goddess who served our ancestors faithfully for some 30,000 years, and after all those years left the earth in pristine condition.